Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Education Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. Please go to my website, TotalTutor.org, to find out more information on the Total Education Network. Well, I'm really excited about today's show. We're going to really be having a celebrity on the program, but also, first, always my co-host. But remember to go to my website, TotalTutor.org, or check me out on Twitter at TotalTutor, or friend me at Neil S. Haley is on Facebook. But I want to welcome to the program, Jarrett, my co-host. Jarrett, thanks for calling.
Not a problem. I'm always glad to be a part of this show.
I'm excited as well, always when you're on the show. But tonight is my topic because we're kind of going back and forth, getting ready. This is like the snippets of what we've done in our radio careers, compiling into a book called The Total Education Show Cookbook, and I'm looking forward to it, hopefully, out in September. We have to keep our fingers crossed, and it's all up to me, again, to make sure all this gets out there because of the magic of what we do on the radio. But let's go right to this, and this kind of goes into a discussion I had on one of my led to a roundtable discussion. We've gone through specific things, and we were talking about a Texas. And we're not going to go into any real political game in this show, but a Texas legislators are calling to bring back corporal punishment to schools. Well, I said, well, and I kind of went into the in discussion, but it led to something I really wanted to talk about. And what I want to talk about is the definition between punishment and discipline. We're talking about working with our teenagers. Because, Jarrett, that is such a tough time, the teen years, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17 when they're still in the home. You know that.
Oh, there's no question about it. And then, interestingly enough, I really would be curious. I can't imagine that the corporal punishment could be even considered with children at that age. Because I really don't think even a parent would, or an adult would have that kind of control over their own child that would at that age would even permit it. And if they did permit it, I would have to believe that there were many other circumstances and incidences that would really kind of preclude that.
No. This is, again, it might be a school-wide thing. I have no idea for sure what the specifics of it is, but we're really going into this thing when it just made me think. So what I talk about on the show, and I kind of got into this, but I want to go right specifics instead of a roundtable with I had with Dr. Jennifer Little on the Total Education Hour, is look at really specifically what we should do as parents when it regards to discipline, either punishment or using consequences and a mixture of rewards. And what's the difference between discipline and punishment? And I kind of defined it in specific ways. My thought between discipline and punishment is discipline teaches you something, punishment does not. A lot of times they look at the negative of punishment. Well, I believe if there's not a teachable moment, Jarrett, it doesn't work.
Well, Neil, my question to you would be in this case, why might a parent even consider using punishment as opposed to discipline, positive reinforcers? You know, what could lead a parent to get to that point where they're really going to consider some drastic measures with their teenager?
So that's a great question, and I really look at this in a specific way that the reason they would consider this is because they're at wit's end. At this point in time, they have not followed your plan, Jarrett, when they were young, and by the time they get older, they are at their last wits. And one of the reasons, one of the wrong things to do with punishment is they're going to scream and yell and intimidate their teenager to make them make sure that they do what they need to do. And that doesn't work. Because here's the thing. A lot of times teenagers want their parents to do this. They think, oh, by me yelling at my daughter when she gets home after she broke curfew, she'll never do it again. When they're feeding into this, if they know that they got you upset, guess what? They're going to do more of it. And I know this from the classroom. Middle school teachers that aren't successful are the ones that yell and scream the entire time. and they look at them like a bunch of fools. If you don't create a relationship at that age, the teen age, now we're not saying a five-year-old you should have a buddy-buddy conversation with, but we're talking teenagers. We have to treat them with respect. And if we don't treat them with respect, Jarrett, we're in a lot of trouble.
Well, and I would like to touch on that a little bit more. You mentioned actually a very good specific and one that I hear from parents, even though I work with younger children. I do see parents who will often ask me questions about discipline for their older child, looking to avoid punishment but really instill discipline. I'd like to go back to that question that the example you just gave me on, that is breaking curfew. Let's put it out there right there now for our listeners. Give parents a suggestion. What would you do? How do you define the difference between punishment and discipline in this case? Your child has come home and has broken curfew. What are you going to do?
See, this is an interesting question. A lot of times, I think also punishment's just outrageous, where it's specifically you're grounded for 2 weekends. Well, what is it teaching them from that process? And let me give you the example. I believe that, yes, grounding should be used as a last measure. It's kind of like anything else. But if you're throwing at it and you're constantly grounding your child, then you haven't had them have that conversation. So if they've broken curfew, the first thing is, have you laid out a plan to them? Do they have a plan written down? What happens if I break curfew? One thing would be, next week they can't go out on that activity, or they are not allowed to have their cell phone anymore. And I don't consider that punishment, Jared. I consider punishment something that is very negative in general. I think taking away privileges is a lot worse to kids than, for example, grounding them. Because what specifically are we teaching them by grounding them?
Well, that's exactly right. And I'll let you answer that. What specifically are we teaching our teenagers by grounding them?
That basically we don't really care for them, and that basically we're just saying you can go to jail for a while and we'll see you later, and that we aren't going to have any teachable moment in this process. And it's very interesting, Jarrett, when I lay things out in a classroom, or I lay things out specifically and I try to teach even at home, and I sometimes get in trouble when I do that. You know, we are teachers. We are not parent educators, but we have become parent educators through early intervention, through behavioral therapy, through all these different hats that you and I wear. And now as parents, that ultimately if kids cannot learn from this, they're going to continue to do this. And I think that's the difference. I think schools that constantly are punishing and not rewarding are negative schools, but that's for another show and another conversation. So let's say the curfew, here's what I would do. First of all, I would go to the parent and have a conversation with them. So first of all, did you explain to them the consequences if they arrive 15 minutes later? No, I just said if they do this or else. Go ahead.
Almost as if they should have known, that the teenager should have known without really having the explanation. That's exactly right. That's a very common mistake that parents will do.
And this is the reason. Here's the reason. Because guess what? After kids turn 7 and they start to develop responsibility, they think that a lot of times I can leave my responsibility towards them. I give them more and more responsibility, but yet I don't watch what they're watching on TV. I don't watch what kids they're hanging out with. I don't pay attention to look for if there's drug use occurring down the line. All of these specific things I don't watch for anymore. So when it comes to something like, I'm going to lay down the groundwork and then that's it. No, that's not going to work. So specifically, just curfew in general, and I guess it'll lead me to some more, I guess, scenarios for the book. Specifically, if you're laying down a curfew, say, okay, here are my expectations, especially if you're going to go out with your friends. One, you need to contact me. Two, you need to tell me who you're going out with. And understand, three, if you do break curfew next time, you're going to lose certain privileges. You'll maybe lose the opportunity to go out the following weekend. We're not saying grounding. We're saying one specific thing. You will lose your cell phone. You will lose something else. But if you do show up for curfew on time regularly, I'll reward you. Maybe now we could consider about going for this learner's permit. Maybe now we could consider of allowing you to take a different car out. Do you see that specifically we are looking at constantly the positive? Or maybe we could go to this baseball game now that you really wanted tickets for, and you can invite one of your friends just because you were able to follow our rules in the house. And that's so key. And I think a lot of times what they make that specific mistake is that they forget that whole thing, Jared. You know, they forget that situation. So what's your thought on that?
Well, you know, I totally agree with what you're saying, and this actually starts in the earliest of years. I mean, what I'm hearing from you and the advice that you're providing for our parents is a list of steps that really provides parents to have a plan, have action, be proactive, not reacting. We talk so much on this show about not reacting. Now, Neil, I want to touch on something. You've tried the loss of privileges. You've gone to the step of grounding. Still not working. What happens next?
So if then we're going to continue to look at specifically taking things away. I think taking things away, Jarrett, is a much better teachable moment than others. So what I would ultimately do when in the house, starting in fourth and fifth grade, a list of chores, responsibilities, privileges, and also consequences. The word consequence is, they look at sometimes as negative, but it's negative if it's in a really bad way. A lot of times, let's just talk about, I got an ear beating for breaking curfew, or they took away my TV, my radio, all these things all at once, and I had nothing but food and water. No,
right.
No. Or you're not allowed to talk to that person for a month. What's that teaching, is specifically teaching that child? So you're right, specific steps need to be.
Don't overdo the discipline. Don't overreact. I think in what I'm hearing here is, give your, you know, don't overdo it, but also give your child an opportunity to even earn it back. You know, to pay it back if those consequences that have been set up by the parent have been logical and address a specific behavior.
And I think that ultimately, if they know they can come to talk to you, they're not going to think about doing something like this, because they're going to be told the responsibility. If a person goes and breaks curfew and specifically doesn't tell where you're going, you could be in danger. You could be in serious danger. And maybe at 11, at 10, you have these conversations. You don't have these conversations when they're teenagers. You have these conversations of, when people do this, what happens? If one of my girls would go out to a party where they really don't have any friends with them, what could happen to them? Let's have these conversations at 11 to 12. Talk about how some people never came back again. Instead of threatening everything in the world, look at why we do these things. A lot of times parents don't explain. Well, I don't want you because I didn't do this when I was a kid. Explain these things. So you're right. It has to be specific guidelines, specific things. Now, when we're looking also at teenagers in specific ways, we also have to look at ultimately taking the brunt of anger at times. And a lot of times we can't take that personally, and we can't feed into that with an argument. And that's another key component that maybe we could talk about at another time on this thought. But you know, that's the other thing, Jared, is loud knockout screaming matches back and forth where neither of them are getting along. Because if your teenagers aren't getting along with you based on the relationship, not based on I told you what to do, but based on your relationship that you don't communicate, that's key. You got to communicate.
And that's exactly right. In fact, in everything that you've shared tonight, you know, communication is at the core of that. You know, what I'm hearing from you is, you know, even the fact that a child has a privilege, and that's really what a parent has done. They've granted that privilege to their child. Yes, you may go to the movies, and yes, you may stay out as late as 11 o'clock, but the parent has granted that child a privilege. That's the role of the parent. You know, the parent has earned that right to do that with the child. And, you know, what I'm hearing from you then is, you know, there's a mutual respect that has to be developed. You do that by talking to your child. You know, you mentioned a little bit about some of the back talk, some of the arguing, that happens at the earliest stages. And I think, you know, in many ways we handle it the same way. And I know you'll touch more on that when we attack this subject later on.
Exactly, Jared. I appreciate coming on and interviewing me. Always great questions, and we'll be in touch, okay?
Very good.
All right, take care.
Always glad to be part of the show.
All right, take care. All right, that was Jared. You're listening to Total Education Show on the Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Show and the Total Education Network. Again, remember to go to my website, TotalTutor.org, for more information. I'm really excited always when we have a celebrity segment, especially an athlete who is giving back to the community. And that's just a fantastic thing after a great career. I want to welcome the program Howard Cross, former New York Giant, Super Bowl champion. Howard, thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks guys for having me.
I'm really excited because of the fact of the matter is anytime to have someone on who did such an awesome job and won a Super Bowl and is a successful athlete who decides to give back to the community after his career is over is so important. Howard, what types of projects are going on right now that you're trying to help the community in large?
Well, you know, the three things that we do mostly here that I've been helping with most is autism speech awareness. Autism is kind of an epidemic that no one really understands from the standpoint. I hear all the tests that are being done, all the, you know, basically scientific studies, but no one really has a handle on why it is. And it's not just in the States, but it's evidently an epidemic around the world. When something like one in every 80 kids or one in 100 kids are being diagnosed with some form of autism, one in every like 50-something boys, it's just about being diagnosed with it. I think that's pretty hefty. And how they're going to handle it, no one seems to know right now. But they're working diligently just to, you know, not only work with trying to find a cure and a way to prevent it, but also working with trying to figure out ways to help educate the everyday population of what's going on there. It also helps that, you know, that we understand that once you're diagnosed if it's severe autism, that, you know, the kids grow up. It's not a terminal disease where you're going to die from it. It's something that you're going to grow up with.
Yes.
And how to address it, how to take care of a person, or, you know, a young person, you know, when a child's, you know, 3 or 4 years old, it's tough, but you can deal with them. When a child's 30 years old, what do you do then? When they're in high school, what do you do then? When they're in their 20s or even older, it becomes a tough thing for a family to understand and deal with, and not only a tough thing but an expensive thing. So there's a lot we're trying to get the word out there.
Well, I think that's great, Howard. Again, I'm an autism expert. I'm an educational advocate. I go in to represent families with autism at IEP meetings, make sure that they get the best education in the least restrictive environment. I help through wraparound services locally in the Pittsburgh area. So I'm a huge autism advocate. So Howard, why did you get involved in the organization? Do you have someone in your family or specifically one of your teammates, former teammates, that has been struck by this epidemic of autism, or just specifically just what's the word that's gone out there that you've decided to get involved?
Well, think about it, you know, and I say this to people all the time when they ask me that question. Do you know someone who doesn't know somebody or that has someone in their family who is an autistic or being diagnosed with autistic? In my neighborhood, in my little development, there are, I think, three children that we are directly in contact with that have some form or some level of autism. And the first development that I was in before I moved, there were two kids that were developmental disorder, and they were diagnosed with autism. So, you know, that alone lets you know that within walking distance from my house, and I do mean a couple, you know, 20, 30 yards from my house, there are kids that are affected by it. I can go to any school in classrooms and see children that are affected by it. You know, it doesn't affect a race of people or a class of people. It affects, you know, seemingly all. It has no boundaries, and there's no real answer. So, you know, the reason why you get involved is that if something is that big and it's happening, it's overwhelming. The other thing that you have to think about is like people who are having kids.
Nice.
You know, 11 years ago, my twins were born. you know, the whole time you're thinking, oh my God, like what's going to happen? And if there's no reason, no answer, all you can do is wait to see what happens. It's a little scary.
Exactly. It is. And I think that the more awareness out there so that we can catch this early. So the early intervention is the key. And if we don't catch it early, we run into a lot of issues later on in life. And specifically, this is a treatable in many ways. You could see tremendous progress of a kid that has that is not highly functioning, is very low autism, get them all the way to highly functioning through therapy. So organizations like Autism Speaks gets the word out. Make sure that we can continue to get children diagnosed with autism, but also the treatment. That's huge, Howard, isn't it?
Yeah, treatment is very important. You know, when a child is born and once they're being diagnosed, if you can get to them earlier, you can help them to assimilate with society quicker. They learn faster. You know, they're not just locked inside. Sometimes they don't know. Again, I don't have all the answers for it, but, you know, the more they get to do the practice, get to do the tests, do the functional exercises to help them to, you know, recognize, understand, and move, it's easier for them to live longer and more productive lives. When you don't, there are families who, well, he's a little slow, or there are families who say, well, you know, he's a little quiet, and they will ignore it for a while. And by the time that they decide to address what's going on with their child, it's not that it's too late. It's just more difficult for their child to grow. It's just like when you teach a child to talk. If you speak to him every day, he speaks back to you. If you teach a child, if you speak to a child in different languages every day, they speak to you back in different languages every day. If you never speak to a child, and he never hears radio or listens to TV or anything, child won't speak. You have to be involved to help them to open that part of their mind so they can actually participate in the world.
Exactly, Howard. And if we don't do that, we do not educate parents, kids are going to continually not progress. And in the academic setting, socially, emotionally, did anyone come to you with this opportunity, or was it more about you are aware and you said, I have to be involved in this based on what we talked about before, knowing someone in your community with autism? Did someone approach you to be involved with this charity, or is it just your initiative to go?
It's my initiative, just getting a chance to go out. You know, it started out with planning their golf event here in New York. You know, you help with the golf events in New Jersey and around you. They actually do some walks. Or, you know, again, my role is really just showing up, smiling, signing some autographs. And, you know, if they ask me to do a promo or something for them, do a promo for them. But it's heartbreaking to understand that it's such a tough thing to deal with. And the child is totally healthy. He's just locked in on the spectrum. And it's one of the things, educate them, help people understand, and get to it as early as possible. You know, training, classes, parents themselves need to know, people around you need to know. So you can help out in so many different ways, but if you don't know, if you're ignoring that moment, it won't happen.
And also being involved with still the Giants organization, that helps as well with the charity, especially kind of getting the word out, being a broadcaster still, getting the word out to specific players in the organization, everyone to kind of understand. So are the Giants involved as well with Autism Speaks?
Well, you know, I think Michael Boley in particular is involved with Autism Speaks. I think he may have an autistic son. So he is very involved with Autism Speaks. Other players who have participated in past years, like Eli Manning, has been at some events. Justin Tuck's been at a couple of events. We try our best to, you know, give back on so many different levels, and this is such a huge moment in the world, which is in our country, but in the world, that we all try to participate.
And I guess the importance is if we can get people that people have noticed, that understand this, that say, oh yeah, I'm going to listen to a celebrity, I'm going to listen to an athlete, maybe before their doctor, which is too bad. But that's what happens to society. The more we get this word out, the fears of parents to not get their kids evaluated, Howard, because that's the situation. A lot of times the pediatrician will give a couple hints, but nothing more than that. So it's up to the parents to finally say, I'm afraid. And I know this for a fact. I have a child who has an IEP for speech, but still understanding that, and she's young, that we were afraid at first to go ahead and say, even though I'm an educator and she's an educator, to get her evaluated. Because as a parent, we don't want our kid, we want our kids to be their very best, and we're afraid when we do this. So what recommendation would you give parents to say, please go out there and get that evaluation, especially if you see signs of this?
Yeah, you know, get it early. Try your kids out. Always try to be as interactive with them as possible. Try to take notice if you think something is wrong. Once you feel anything, it doesn't hurt to get them tested. You get their height and weight tested. You check their growth plate to see how tall you think they're going to be. Check them for autism. It's not too crazy. It's not too off out of the way. Just, you know, one more step won't kill you. The other thing is that the more awareness we have, the more the government itself will have to take, really recognize what's going on, and the medical world has to recognize what's going on. So, which means that the insurance world will recognize what's going on and understand that, you know, these families need help.
Yes, they definitely need help. And if we can't get the word out, you're exactly right. And tell the government, we need help. And that specifically, this is becoming a very, very, everyone knows of a child with autism. And the only way to help is funding, because luckily we're very lucky in the Western Pennsylvania area that the government, the states, and local levels pay for lots of therapy. But in other cities, that's not the case at all. Most parents have to pay right out of their pocket, which is really can be a very expensive cost with all those therapies, right?
Yeah, it's an expensive cost for the parents. It's an also an expensive cost when the child gets so old or grows to the point that the parents can't take care of them. If the child is, again, I said it earlier, if the child is 3-4 years old, it's going to be tough for a parent, but you're able to handle, be around, physically pick up, move, and take care of that child. When a child becomes 14, 15, 18 years old, you can't really pick a child up at 18 and walk him out of a room if something's wrong to calm him down. You need help at that time. That means you're going to have an aide. Aides are expensive. Once a child becomes 20, let's say you're in your late 50s or late 60s, late 70s, now all of a sudden you may not be able to take care of your child.
Basically, you can learn more information by you learning from Wikipedia and specific other things with the Giants organization, all that stuff. But Howard, I appreciate you calling the program. Love to have you back on again to learn more about some of the other charities you're working with, because you're doing a great thing for the community. And I think a lot of players now in the NFL need to look at you and say, you know what, we need to do this stuff as well, because we can make a difference. The people that have a name can help others. So I appreciate you calling.
Well, remember this when you think about players, no matter what league it is, they do so many great things that unfortunately never gets published.
Yes.
When you hear them done or not, it's usually to talk about how it affects the game, or you know, what a person's done to take themselves off the field, whether it's, you know, bad or injury or something like that. If that rang out every time that a person did something good, then the TV would be filled with it every day. Our guys, they're doing a lot of things, a lot of foundations, a lot of charities, and a lot of good work.
All right. Well, thanks again for calling the program and taking the time to talk to me, Howard. Thanks again.
All right,
take care. All right, that was Howard Cross. You're listening to the Total Education Show on the Total Education Network. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Show on the Total Education Network. Remember to go to my website, TotalTutor.org, for more information. Fantastic show. Great, excellent guests. You got to go to my website, TotalTutor.org, for more information. I hope everyone has a great week. We'll talk next week. Good day, everyone.